Good morning and welcome to the Roundtable panel for this Friday. It is wonderful to have you aboard, and it's we're getting ready for a holiday weekend, so we're all excited. And even though the weather is quite choppy, which we'll talk about in just a second, we welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. WAMC's Alan Chartok joins us. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Joe.
And good morning, Ray Graff.
Good morning, Joe.
And good morning to Rosemary Armeo, University at Albany professor and investigative journalist. Always a pleasure. Thank you very much for being here.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you. All right.
Very polite today.
Yes. Well, we're gonna
just to start out.
and then it'll all go downhill.
Yeah. You know what happened yesterday is Rosemary and I got into trouble with a couple of people for duking it out all the time. But I'm not giving that up. I love to.
I know. That's the whole point, isn't it, Alan?
Yeah. You know, there's always somebody out there who wants to make a little trouble, but that's okay. That's their right too, you know.
And I don't. I think good spirited conversation. And
yeah.
You know.
Oh yeah. Some people get nervous when there's good spirited conversation.
It's like we all
get nervous.
It's like mommy, daddy, stop fighting.
That's right. Well, we're not.
It wasn't. You know what happened in my house on 96th Street where I grew up. You were lucky if plates didn't fly.
Exactly. In my house, you know, the round table, we did it every dinner. So. Huh.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Let us talk about, speaking of a whirling dervish, let's talk about the possible tornado. This whole thing fascinates me of where we are technologically, but we still need there to be on the ground confirmation, which is interesting. I'm not saying that it's bad. I'm just saying that I think it's interesting.
To me, whether it was a twister or just straight line winds.
Yeah, of whether it was indeed a tornado. So that comes when the National Weather Service will go and actually inspect the site to see, which I think makes sense, but it is interesting to me.
But ultimately, if your house is knocked down, it really doesn't matter what it was.
It doesn't matter. Well, when it comes for funding and state and federal funding, it does matter.
I suppose.
Yes, and insurance as
well. But you make a very good point, Joe, because they saw the twister on the radar, apparently.
Yes.
So, I mean, how much proof do you want?
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say there's a team from the University at Albany that's out studying this. Their specialty is extreme weather. So, in a way, they've had the laboratory blown right up to their back door.
Right. Mm-hmm. And it touched down near Amsterdam, churned across Duanesburg and tore into western Albany County on Thursday afternoon. All of this, according to the Times Union, destroying at least one home, damaging others, turning over tractor trailers and stunning even seasoned meteorologists with its size and its duration. And we are happy to report that as of now and of what we know, no one was injured or,
amazing.
Or God forbid killed.
One house was completely crushed, but the woman who owned it was not home. Very, very fortunate.
And I think if there is one good thing about the, well, I think there's a lot of good things, but of the reporting, because of once the warning was issued by the National Weather Service, then most of the stations went on full bore and would not go off until the warning had been lifted.
Yes. And even beyond that as well.
Yes.
As some stations did.
Well, and because they were also going into their news time, which makes sense. But but that's also very helpful because you're seeing it and people take the appropriate precautions.
All right, broadcasters and journalists, let me ask you this. In the heat of this reporting and basically wall-to-wall coverage on some stations, is it okay, in your estimation, to read unfiltered tweets from listeners as reporting? I heard a lot of this yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love to know what you think about that.
Well, give us an example. What do you mean?
Well, so-and-so tweeted us at whatever hashtag.
Yeah.
Near DeLanson, it looked bad, trees are down.
Now, I don't know. I don't think this is any different than in any other news story that we're dealing with in this current media and technological environment, where we saw this during the Boston Marathon, where a lot of the information coming in from CNN and the other news organizations that were going live, that were using tweets from people who were at the scene. I think it happens quite often, even in rather staid environments where they're waiting for someone to come in and speak, and people will get the information from the tweet. I think it's a great point. It's a great question, but I think it's something that we're all going on. Let me just say this, which is, when we were watching it here in our newsroom yesterday, the one thing, there is quite a gap when you're trying to report. There's quite a gap as to what is official and what has happened. The meteorologists will look at the computers and tell you what's happening, but what has actually happened on the ground? And I think you do. I mean, one of the things that we were talking about yesterday is, yeah, let's start monitoring all of the social media to see what happens. Now, the difference, and I'm not saying it's right or wrong, I'm just saying there is a difference. We did not report on that, but it did help us to actually triangulate and say, okay, this is where we want to go, and this is where we want to send a reporter to look at
it. But many stations took them, and I heard it.
I did read them straight off
the feed.
No, we were watching it.
Real time. And my question is, we'll start with Rosemary, perhaps. Is it...
Why not me?
Well, all right. How about you, then? This not...
Oh, how about Rosemary?
You go first.
Let me just...
I suspect we're going to say the same thing.
I was going to say, let's go in alphabetical order, but that doesn't work out either. Okay, go ahead.
Can I throw the question?
You already did.
No, I...
You already threw the question.
No, I didn't.
Okay, go ahead.
All right.
Throw the question.
In this situation, in which this is not a national security issue, as perhaps the Boston Marathon bombing may have been, or some terrorist events are. So tweets take on a different character in a potential national security event, and vetting them would be more important. But in an event like this, where it is a terrible thing, it is a weather event... Is it okay? And I guess, why don't we go with Alan first? Alan.
It's okay. In my mind, what you do is, first of all, you have experienced news people on our side, people like you and Joe and Ian, to make decisions. You know, you can smell a rat. When somebody is being purposely deceptive, you can often see this person is not somebody we ought to be going with. But in terms of, ladies and gentlemen, a house just got knocked down in Delanson. I see no good reason not to. And by the way, the distinction between what happened in the Ukraine and what happened here, Ray, to me makes not a lot of sense. I think it is an emergency. All I can tell you is wherever I go, people are stopping me and saying thanks for talking about the weather, because they depend on us to be out front, and you're not going to be out front if you have to send a team. Now, Rosemary.
Okay, I guess we don't agree. No one's talking about not talking about the weather, but Ray is talking about using unadulterated, unchecked out reports. There's a house knocked down. How do you know there's a house knocked down? Because you saw a tweet? No. You get a tweet that says that, you send somebody out, just like you said, Joe. You use Twitter, which has been very actually effective in getting information out among people who are dealing with an emergency. You use that to figure out your coverage. But no, I wouldn't read raw tweets. That's ridiculous.
You know, I will say that, one of the things, I mean, I think they can be helpful in a newsroom, because we found it, because we heard that there was a truck down on I-88. Then we found out that one of our staff members was driving home and saw it. And then they verified the fact that, yes, the truck was on its side, and we talked to them, and we used that on the air. So that is, you know, that's different. That is using it to, again, triangulate the issue.
I think you have to remember that there are a lot of people who get their jollies out of going on Twitter and putting fake reports,
putting bogus
information in the middle of a crisis.
Baba Booey.
Right. Yes, absolutely.
Well, okay, so it looks like it's 3-1. But I don't care. Because I have tremendous respect for Rosemary and what she says. But here's what: you can have Twitters or tweets or whatever they are from two places or three places, and begin to see, as you say, triangulate what's going on. You know, I think at some point you identify it as coming from a tweet. You say, we've been tweeted. And then you say, this has happened. And then if it turns out to not, and you can even offer instructions, which are, you don't have to, this has not been confirmed, but this is what we're hearing. I don't see anything that's wrong with it.
Well, let me ask, because you brought up Baba Booey. Let me ask, is this any different than, and we've seen this time and time again in coverage where, on television coverage where, say, the space shuttle, there's a space shuttle disaster and it explodes. And then you start to get the people, and because of the 24-hour news cycle, you start to get all the people, I found this in my backyard. And they call, and they get the person on the phone who calls the newsroom and say, I found a part of the space shuttle in my backyard. And you can't confirm that. It's that person. What's the difference? Because there really isn't, is there?
I think it's the same thing. I mean, I would. There is a story that dozens of calls are coming in from people reporting debris they're being checked out now. Or you have a piece of debris, let me see it. But I think that there's a high possibility of someone saying, house is knocked down here, or I have a piece of debris. Yeah, I want to see it.
Now, the difference between you and us is that you come from a print background where you have that time
that
to
time,
do it.
Yeah.
Where we want to tell people that this is going on I-88 at that moment.
Well, I mean, everybody's got cameras now. They have cell phones. Can't you have someone, shoot a picture of it and send it to me?
Well, I think
even that doesn't
tell. Because they take old pictures from other disasters and they use them. I mean, that's a lot of the information is wrong, too.
I wouldn't use it. I mean, you're just building my case when you say things
like
that.
No, I know. I know. I think it's a great point, though. Alan?
No, I think it's a bad point.
You're a contrarian.
I think it's a good point. And as I say, that's why you have experienced news people. But, you know, you have to factor in the fact that there are so many news people who are invested in their own professional status, journalists. We don't listen to tweets. We don't, come on, everybody, wake up and smell the coffee. If you're getting three or four tweets from around the place, where there's smoke, there's fire. And again, you don't have to take full responsibility. You just have to say we've received four tweets. For example, we just received a tweet from, we just received something from Matt Mann who says, I like the timeline of which communities would be affected at what time. I had my map out and could get a good idea of movement by the
time. Yeah, but that's from meteorologists.
Meteorologists.
You have just heard from Alan a perfect explanation of why the news media is held in such low regard, because we do care about our reputations and about speed more than accuracy. That has never been more prevalent, more easy to see than in disasters like storms, like the Boston Marathon.
Well, the other thing I was going to say is just going back to another point of again, we talk about this, but I wonder is there any difference in this than because we see it in the tweet and we have the pictures, whatever, but the meteorologist who says we just received the report from our weather watcher in Ghent who says we have 17 inches of snow.
Yeah, well, presumably that's someone that they know and have vetted and they can trust his word. You don't even know who the tweet is from.
Well, and James just checked in. I think the question was not whether reporting on tweets is bad, but whether the reading of live tweets for 5 minutes is not, in my mind, considered reporting.
Good.
Right.
So it looks like I'm on a different side from the rest of you on this, but I still think it can be done professionally, and I think you can be ahead. And in 5 minutes in a tornado can be huge in terms of warning.
Well, I think so too, but again, does it become science? Does it become contrary to the science? Number one, and number two, does it also create an hysteria that is not warranted in a given case?
Hysteria is one thing, and there, Alan is right in that people who are involved in catastrophes. I'm thinking of wildfires out in Colorado. They have very much used Twitter as a way to communicate with each other, simply because that information is faster than waiting for official sources. I think if I were involved, if it were my house in the path of the whatever it was, we don't know yet, I think I would be on Twitter reading it. But I'm not sure that that's the same as reporting. That's the difference.
Well, it's a good discussion. We heard from Marietta, who said, so interesting, just discussing this with colleagues around medical decision making. Often a patient knows more than their doctor about particular rare diseases, especially if they've lived with it and researched it for years under the physician. Well, the physician knows little. Is the patient equal to the physician, or does a physician need to go back and research and make their own decision, including the patient patient input. But you know what's great about this question? It may not be said specifically, but it is. Once you're credentialed, are you allowed to talk about it because you have that credential, or do people or should be people be trusted even if they don't have MD or weatherman after their name?
A colossal difference between what Marietta says and what we're talking about here is when you're getting a tweet from somebody, a doctor knows who the patient is. A doctor knows that that patient has the illness. A doctor gives that level of ground because the doctor knows that person has the illness. We don't know who the tweets are from in many cases.
Okay, we're going to take
a
break.
That's the terrible part. That is the terrible part. Right, you're right about that.
We're going to take a break, and we welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Yeah, there we go. Thank you very much. I sort of lost my way there. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Please tweet and tell me where I am. Roundtable at WAMC.org. And when we come back after our news break, we will talk about one of the most interesting and fascinating stories that I think we will probably ever talk about on this program. That next.
Yay.
Here on the Roundtable. Good morning and welcome back to our Roundtable discussion, and as promised, we will have we'll talk about one of the most interesting stories that we'll probably ever talk about on this program. But before we do that, we have letters to get to.
We do. Our friend Beth says, "I hate computers, but if there are no investigative reporters on the ground during an emergency, then by all means necessarily warn and report. You don't like it, then do what you are supposed to, run towards the danger or shut up. Not sure I fully understand it, but I get some of the point." And then there is Elizabeth who said, "If you were to report on the, quote, content of a tweet as news without collaborating, it would be dangerous. Irresponsible to report, quote, the facts that people are tweeting certain information seems perfectly appropriate. Is it any different from interviewing witnesses who are escaping from a disaster to ask them what they have seen?" And I guess that's it. You see any others? Oh, wait a second. Linda checked in with a very important message. She said, "It's so good to have Ray back. 4 exclamation points. Love the show." And that's from Linda. And I love Ray being here because, as you know, he keeps it real. And then Billy Easton, you know Billy Easton.
I know
Easton.
Billy. Yep.
You can't. Yeah, sure. He's a great guy. He says, "You can't believe everything you read on Twitter." And he attributes that to Abraham Lincoln.
Well played.
Absolutely. All right. Yeah. So, as promised, here's the story. This from the New York Times, and I don't know, Rosemary, if I can make a promise that we'll get to as many stories as we get to yesterday.
I know this one, I wanted to devote the whole show to this. I'm fascinated by this. I especially want to hear Alan's take on this. You're
all right.
A silver expert.
So here's the story. From the New York Times. "To Sheldon Silver, the powerful speaker of the New York State Assembly, it was nothing but a simple case of mistaken identity. In the 1970s, Mr. Silver, a Democrat, worked with a nonprofit group, the United Jewish Council of the East Side, to block low-income housing on a large barren site in his district on the Lower East Side of Manhattan, the beginning of a decades-long effort that was described in a recent article in the New York Times. Those actions," Mr. Silver insisted after the article was published, "were actually taken by another man, Sheldon E. Silver, a Minneapolis-born lawyer who moved to Brooklyn in the early 1970s and, we are sad to report, died in 2001. I was forever confused with this guy," Mr. Silver said at a breakfast he hosted on Thursday at the State Democratic Convention. "Even after he left there, I got phone calls from people who I knew." Mr. Silver spokesman Michael Weiland said in an email that the other Mr. Silver was a counsel to the UJC in the 1970s and early 1980s. And Mr. Weiland said, "You can understand why he would be upset. But the documents cited in the article make clear that Speaker Silver, a master at distancing himself from controversies and scandals in his chamber..."
Wait. Read that sentence again. It's a crucial sentence.
It's a crucial sentence. "A master at distancing himself from controversies and scandals in his chamber was in fact the person who pressed New York City officials to allow an international mall to be built on the site instead of low-income housing. The letter, written on his official stationery from the assembly, and minutes of the meeting with city officials clearly identify Mr. Silver as the lawmaker, not the similarly named lawyer from Brooklyn. Okay, who wants to go first?
All that Sheldon Silver had to do about this particular piece of investigative reporting was to shut up. Right. I mean, this isn't the crime. This isn't a crime. Look, I read the thing three times. It's a little bit confusing, but it's clear that Sheldon E. Silver was there for about, according to his wife and kid, who's also a lawyer, for about 6 months, and they dispatched him. So there was only one Sheldon Silver, without an E, who is the speaker, representing this. Look, this is classic politics. Think about this. Why would this become such a brouhaha? Because if you have public housing, you are bringing people in to a community who are not like the people who are in the community at the time, and they vote. Are we all following this?
Yes, we are.
So therefore, the idea was to keep these projects out. I think it's something that he could have done. I don't think that it's the end of the world. But the fact that he's trying to get out from under this makes me scratch my head and say, what is he doing? Why did he have to get into this whole thing? Now, Rosemary, is that your reading of it?
Pretty close. The New York Times was very, very, very careful not to call the speaker a liar, nor will I do that here because that would be slander and that would be very, very wrong. But there is a gap between what the speaker is saying and what the documentary evidence and what mm-hmm. other people sure. who are party to all this say. That is very intriguing. And you are right. The speaker started it. He went to the New York Times and said, no, you got it wrong. You got to run a correction here because you're picturing me as someone who opposed low-income housing coming into my district. That never happened. And the New York Times, as they must do, begin investigating even more closely. And, of course, what they found was more support for their position, not less. And I just love the widow of the other guy, other Silver.
Who Sheldon E. Silver.
Yes.
Shoshana Silver, the widow of the deceased lawyer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and she says at the very end of the story, this was a very artfully written story made to make the case against the speaker. And she says, I guess he just doesn't want to be held accountable now for what he did then. That's exactly what it looks like.
Just so you know where the controversy is now, because the widow, Shoshana Silver, has said that he was only there for a few months. And
her husband was
only there for a few months.
Sheldon E. Silver.
And then she recalls it clearly because they had been recently married when he lost the job. The speaker, meanwhile, said that the widow was mistaken. Quote, he didn't work there for a few months. He worked there for, several years, the speaker said, adding for emphasis that he did not serve as the group's counsel.
Right. And then the New York Times found that the speaker's office had been calling furiously into the Jewish council that is responsible for all this, looking for evidence that would prove their point, the point they were already stating emphatically and demanding at the time a correction from the New York Times. I hope this really is not classic politics because it's awfully sleazy looking.
No, it is classic politics. And when you say you hope that it isn't, you know that it is.
Yes. And it is
classical politics. But there's one more element of this. It's probably the reason the speaker isn't talking to me these days because I've been talking about this a lot. The speaker's chief of staff is one Judy Rapfogel. She's been with him from the very beginning. And she is married to William Rapfogel, who has already taken a plea from stealing $1 million from a Jewish communal poverty group in the same area. And this is probably what's got, it's getting very close. Now, when the New York Times does a story like this, and there's this fight between the descendants of Sheldon E. Silver and Sheldon Silver, if you're still following me, when there are going to be all kinds of people who were there at the time and are going to say, come out of the woodwork. Now, remember, people are scared of Andrew Cuomo because he's a hard-driving governor. But they're also scared of Shelley Silver because he is incredibly powerful. Certainly the second most powerful person in New York State. No question about it, after the governor. And so so this questioning of his credibility goes to his base. Remember, if you're saying, I don't want public housing in my district, there are people in his conference who are going to take offense at that. Are you following me? They are people who would want public housing and who will see this as being not a good thing.
Right. This isn't the first time that he's gotten into trouble for what you've called classic politics. There was the incident last year where he covered up for a colleague who had a little sexual problem. Do you remember that? And
indeed.
He kind of did a lot of fast talking to get out, get around that as well. It's just really,
he'll probably get away with this.
Disturbing.
He'll probably get away with this.
Very disturbing.
I'll tell you why he'll get away with it. It is disturbing, but I'll tell you why he gets away with it. Because it wasn't, as I see it, maybe somebody read the column differently, the article differently than me, than I did. As I see it, I don't see any crime here. In other words, it was classic politics, all right. It may have been dirty politics. It may have been something they wanted to avoid. But does anybody see a crime?
No, I agree. I looked for that, too. I don't see anything illegal. It's nothing.
But why go through all the trouble of covering it up, and as Rosemary indicated, to go to the, because he's the one who started it, going
right.
to, you know, to, because it could have just gone away then.
Well, because I think, Joe, for years he's probably been talking about Sheldon E. Silver, you know, when this kind of stuff comes up, and getting away with it, and people have been saying, yeah, right. Well, that explains it. But in fact, if he does this, as I said, there, everything in that conference, those people vote for speaker, is being balanced, and I don't think it was helpful to him to have him being portrayed as anti public affordable housing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I think he did it. And I think all politicians get caught for, and everybody else does too, who does something wrong, for one single word. And that single word is group?
Cover up.
Arrogance.
Yeah, oh, arrogance.
Yeah, I like that one better.
Money or arrogance, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, I guess I want to just quickly, before we wrap up this conversation on this issue of what is the, we're looking at something that ultimately happened in the 1970s, and it's, what's the expiration date on something like that of us looking at the character and of the sleaziness of it, and if this doesn't, if the event that Rosemary talked about, where he signed off on the payout to two sexual harassment victims for Vito Lopez, the assemblyman, $105,000 or whatever it was, if that doesn't stick, then why would something that happened, you know, 30, 40 years ago stick?
Well, the difference.
Well, I'll tell you why. Because he's the Go ahead.
I was just going to say, and you build on this, Alan. Is the difference is that it doesn't matter what we think. We're upstate. We don't have anything to do with saying whether he goes back into the assembly or not. The people in New York do. This got really big play in the New York Times, and it's an inflammatory issue. And it's not the first one. As I say, it builds on something else. So it's will it stick eventually? Is my question. And they don't put him back in Albany.
Well, exactly. The whole point is building a base with all of these stories that creates a climate in which, you know, enough already. You know, how long are you going to be speaker? I think the longest served. There's Oswald Hecht, who may have been a year or more, but I don't think so anymore. I think the next time he will be the longest serving speaker in New York State.
Oh, we should look that up. That's interesting. Yeah,
and he has the single. He's a very important guy in that. As long as those people sitting, the Democrats in the Assembly, keep voting for him, he's going to have tremendous power.
Term limits.
I'm for them. I'm for them. Although my fellow political scientists are not, because they say, oh, well, it stops people from voting for who they want to. But, you know, this thing is such a setup now. I do think term limits for state legislators is a good idea. Mm-hmm. And I've always thought so.
We're going to take a break. And when we come back, we'll talk about another story or two. We'll also get a lockbox update. We welcome your input. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back after the short break.
Support for WAMC comes from New York Pain Management. Doctors Charles Gordon and Quentin Fung, offering management of chronic pain and spine care in a private office setting in Clifton Park and Glens Falls, 518-371-0777. Haldora Reinbeck, women's clothing designs in natural fibers, linen, silk, and cotton, sewn in upstate New York. Hanro of Switzerland Undergarments, Jillian Julius Jewelry, Fabrizio Jeans, Haldora.com. And the Paul Green Rock Academy, Woodstock, offering summer day and overnight camps with professional musicians. Who loves rock music? We do. RockAcademy.com.
Good morning and welcome back to our roundtable panel. We have a couple more issues. We're going to do a really quick lightning round. And but before we do that, we want to get an idea of how we go into a holiday weekend on the lockbox. And it's a long holiday weekend. We don't want it to be out of sight, out of mind. We want you to be thinking about it every moment of the weekend so that when we come back here on Tuesday, we can report an incredible number that will blow us all away. But let us tell us where we are now. For those of you who don't know, Alan, real quick, talk about the challenge. Okay.
We have a $25,000 challenge. $25,000 challenge from Mr. Big in Northwest Connecticut. That's an incredible amount of money. We need it, and obviously it will bring us a long way to helping end the fund drive. We only need about $100,000 now, which is $20,000 a day, less than $20,000 a day, which we can do easily since we make $100 in every day of the fund drive. And for all those people who say we spend too much time on the fund drive, and I say, did you put anything into the lockbox? And they go, blah, blah, blah. So that, therefore, you know, let's get it done, folks.
Okay, so now we are at, with 10 days left.
We are at.
Clear my throat. 10 days left.
$224,160. So we need just over $100,000
in the
next 10 days.
So we need $100,000. Well, yeah. So between friends.
$10,000 a day.
Yes, $10,000. That's $10,000 a day.
We can do it.
Man, it seems like
we can
do it.
And remember, remember when you put your money in, say, Joe sent me, or Ray sent me, or Alan sent me.
Or Rosemary sent me.
Or
Megan sent me.
Whatever.
Or Dave Hopper, the engineer, sent me.
Cuz, we're all in this together.
We're all in this together.
And you can get a beautiful mug.
And Ray is, and keeping it real. Yeah, what about that mug with your name on it?
$10,000 mug.
Ouch,
well, much more than that, because 2 weeks later, you'll be married, because somebody will be seeing it. 2 weeks later, you'll be married, and then when you get divorced, it'll cost you a lot more than $10,000.
Right.
I love that commercial.
Yeah,
well, we have a lot of people that are going to be getting married because there's a lot of folks that have gotten the mug.
Yeah,
that's great.
And what's the most popular name?
Yeah. Oh, gee, Ray, I haven't looked
that
up.
You haven't looked at that?
No.
Jerry.
Jerry.
No, yeah,
really?
Jerry.
Jerry. Yeah, Sheldon. Jerry.
Sheldon E.
Yep. We have a lot of Jerrys, oddly enough. All right. So it's $10,000 a day, $100,000 to go. I'm rounding up a little bit, but not by much. So it's very, very exciting.
When does the fund drive start?
June 2nd. So we have.
Was that a week from Monday?
Yeah.
Yes.
Ah, ridiculous. Really?
Right.
We can do it, Ray. We can do it.
Okay.
I believe.
So just remember, we're gonna keep on you. The weekend, I know it's a holiday weekend.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Got to do it. Okay, WAMC.org. I'm sorry, what was that, Alan?
Jack Lescooley. Don't know what that means, but.
Jack Lescooley used to be Dave Garraway's partner on the earliest Today Show.
Yeah.
That shows how old I am.
Was that the monkey?
This is the from
no,
the
No, that was
ancient,
Fred Muggs,
no,
right?
This is from the ancient Trivial Pursuit version.
That's right.
By the way, J. Michael Malik took a great exception to what I said. I know the other argument. Term limits increase the power of lobbyists and legislative staff who are not limited. Yeah, J. Michael. But what happens is that... The new guys bring new people with them, so it's really not. That's a little too pat. But anyway, that's a difference of opinion. Hi ho, Silver. Hi ho, Silver. Tell Denise Silver.
All right, Megan. Thank you very much for the update. We appreciate all of your efforts into this, keeping track of this very important challenge. $25,000 on the line that we lose if we can't make the $100,000 in the next 10 days. It all seems quite possible, but we need you to stay eyes on the prize, stay focused, and please do what you can. WAMC.org, WAMC.org. You can also call us 1-800-323-9262. If you look on your phone, you'll notice that 9262 spells out WAMC.
Yes,
it does. And also,
I knew that. Me neither.
Also, just go to extension 145, but just press 0, and we'll get your
information.
Thank you very much. Yeah, pledge was the word I was looking
pledge,
for. Thank you.
Information. All right, wrap it up, Sheldon. Let's get out of here.
All right. Megan, thank you very much.
Thank
You're
you.
Great. Appreciate
have a great
it.
Weekend.
Thank you. Have a wonderful weekend. And to all of you, have a great holiday weekend. Rosemary, thank you. We'll see you on Tuesday.
Yes,
remember,
I got that Tuesday.
Look
not
at me.
Monday.
No Monday. Tuesday. I did tell Libby, so we're good. Ray, we're not here Monday, so don't.
All right.
Okay. You know that?
That's in the contract.
Okay. Excellent. Alan, have a great weekend.
Hi, O Silver.
Okay. Thank you very much. We'll be back after the short break.